We are scheduled to take final action on Framework 23 to the Sea Scallop Management Plan. The Council has received at previous meetings, presentations, updates. The issues have been raised already. You should be well aware of what is being proposed in the framework. There should be very little new to you, although there are a few things, and we will highlight what they are as we proceed through the different decisions that the Council needs to make. There are seven documents in the binder, and Deirdre will describe what you have for meeting materials and will also describe the Council's progress to date. I'm not going to go over that. She has it very well described in her presentation. The purpose and the need for this particular framework is described on page 7 of the framework document. Four very specific issues that Deirdre will cover in her presentation as she walks us through the framework and then lists the different committee motions specific to preferred alternatives that we selected at our last committee meeting. Her presentation is comprehensive, as it always is. Thanks to her for that. No stone is left unturned. You'll find one unforeseen development that resulted from a committee request for additional information from her and the plan development team. She and the plan development team followed up on a committee request, and their findings were very significant regarding our understanding of the yellowtail flounder bycatch in the general category fishery. That's one of the issues. As it turns out, bycatch in the general category fishery dramatically differs between fishing gear types, trawls versus dredge, and that has implications for the last committee decision and motion that is to be made here today. And I've discussed this issue with the chair, and we have a strategy to handle that. We'll get to that, of course, at the end of the list of decisions that we need to make. Document number 7 that you have before you covers this particular issue, and Deirdre, of course, will delve into that. With that said, Deirdre will give her presentation, and you'll see from document number 6, I believe it is, her handouts, that we're not going to listen to her entire presentation and then go back to the beginning and take decision 1 through decision 10. That won't be very productive. In order to make this discussion flow well and for us to make what I suspect will be decisions in support of the committee motions, we'll take it one by one. So she will pause after each issue. The motion will then be made by me on behalf of the committee. I suspect there'll be some brief discussion in most cases, and then we'll make those decisions and move forward to decision 10, when I suspect we'll have to spend a bit more time with description of the issue, the data before us, and what the best course of action would be relative to adopting Framework 23 today. With that said, I'll turn to Deirdre and ask her to walk us through the framework.
Thank you, David. Okay, document number 6 is the presentation, and I also suggest you probably take out document number 5, the decision document. And you may have to refer to other things as we go, but if you have those handy, might help things. So the list on the board I just wanted to put in one place so you have it and to benefit the audience. There's a lot of different documents, I realize that, for this meeting. But we tried to get them out to you as soon as possible since there was a Scallop AP and committee meeting just a week and a half ago. So documents 1A is really all of the framework measures plus the affected environment description. So the first half of that document, you can see a much more detailed description of the different measures with figures and tables and so forth, a longer version of the decision document. Document 1B has all of the impacts. Hopefully you've had a chance to thumb through some of that, which highlights some of the more primary issues and impacts of these different measures under consideration. Document 1C is pretty lengthy. It's related to the fishery trends. Usually we update information about catch and permits and so forth and different ports, and all of that information is included as well. There will be a few other appendices for this framework, but we wanted to get that out to the public at least one time before final action to give you a sense of basically an update of where things are. Document number 2 is a copy of the over 20 motions from the advisors. It was a very long but productive meeting with the advisory panel, and they were able to make motions related to each of the different measures. The committee followed them the next day on September 13th, and except for one case, the advisors and committee are coming to you today with the same exact motions, essentially, for final action, so that's great, and usually can make you feel comfortable. There's a good wide range of support behind each of the decisions, except really for one, and I'll highlight as we're going through. Document number 4, there's actually 4A and 4B. That's all the correspondence related to scallops for this meeting. Just so you know, there were 7 or 8 comments, but they're really mostly related to priorities, which were discussed yesterday, and there's really only 2 comments, I believe, that were related to the framework in terms of comments from the public. And I think one was also handed out today during lunch. So there's all of those correspondence for you to keep an eye out for. Then there's the decision document, this presentation. And finally, document 7 is the one David mentioned before, which I will get into a little bit later in this discussion related to additional information we've dug up about the observer data. So meetings to date, just so you're aware, the Scallop Committee has been working on this action pretty much for all of 2011. It was initiated in January. There were 2 committee meetings to develop measures. There were 3 PDT meetings to develop measures and complete analyses. The advisors met in May to develop measures. And then finally in September, both the advisors and committee met one final time to identify preferred alternatives. And final action is scheduled for today. So Framework 23, there are 4 primary issues to be covered in this action. The first one is to minimize impacts on sea turtles through the requirement of a turtle deflector dredge. The second one is to improve the effectiveness of the yellowtail AMs developed under Amendment 15. The third one is to consider specific changes to the Northern Gulf of Maine Management Program. And finally, one alternative to consider modifications to the VMS system. You'll notice that the decision document takes these out of order, and that was on purpose. That's how we did it at the advisors and committee meeting, and it seems to make sense, so we're going to do that again today. And as David mentions, there are 10 overall decisions the council needs to get through, and if you get through those, you have gotten through the document. So starting with the first topic, that's the turtle deflector dredge. This turtle deflector dredge has been developed over the last few years. Section 2.1 of the document provides some background about that development. I have on the board, it's difficult to see, but there are 5 primary elements of this dredge. I'm not going to read them, but so you're aware, they're pretty specific technical changes to the commercial standard dredge that in an effort to basically, if a turtle comes into contact with the dredge on the seafloor, it is going to come up and over the dredge because there are bars that have now been placed in front. I do have a figure here. And to show you the evolution from the bottom is the standard dredge that's typically used in most vessels today. And over time, it has been researched in various places on various vessels. And ultimately, dredge design number 5, the one on the top, you can see how that design, if it comes into contact with something on the seafloor, it's supposed to go up and over. And that has been tested and documented in flume tanks and I think over 2,000 different tows in the ocean in this region. So there are different boundary options, different season options, different vessel options in terms of who would be required to use this dredge, and finally, how long should the delay of effectiveness be for this dredge to give vessels time to build these dredges. So I have 1 slide just to go over the general impacts of this turtle dredge. And as I mentioned, document 1B has a much longer summary of all of these different impacts. But in general, there have been many paired toes analysis completed with the standard dredge right next to the turtle dredge. And all of this analysis the PDT synthesized, and basically the conclusion is that the dredge, the turtle dredge, if anything, is slightly more efficient at catching scallops. It's not statistically significant, but most of the results suggest that the dredge does catch about 4% more scallops. And the size of the scallops does not, we're not seeing any major differences in the size selectivity of the dredge either. There are some figures I've noted there that I think help illustrate kind of the nuts and bolts and final conclusions of all of those analyses, figures 1 and 2. In terms of the impacts on turtles, the purpose of this dredge, what the PDT tried to do as best we could is basically quantify the benefits of this dredge on turtles compared to basically no action. And currently, from the last biological opinion done on this fishery, the mortality rate scallop dredges on turtles is 64% of turtles believed to have an encounter with the dredge, there would be mortality. The turtle dredge that's under the proposed action, along with the turtle chain mat, which is already required in this fishery, is believed to bring that mortality rate down to 28%. So when the PDT takes the current estimate of interactions for the scallop fishery right now is currently estimated to be 125 turtles per year, and you basically go through a very simple calculation of the difference, it's a pretty staggering reduction and conservation benefit estimated from the combined effects of the turtle dredge plus the already required turtle chain mat. And all of this is described in a lot more detail within the framework, but this was the PDT did spend a significant amount of time working on quantifying this, as you recall, in some of our recent discussions related with the turtle interactions in this fishery. There's been some frustration about not being able to quantify some of these impacts. So we took the extra time to do that in this action, and I think it's a great step forward. In terms of bycatch, impacts on bycatch from this turtle dredge have also been tested. The results are a little more varied in terms of species, and I would note that the researchers believe more research needs to be done to really conclusively say what the impacts are on bycatch in different areas and so forth. But in general, less finfish and fewer of some skates are caught with the turtle dredge compared to the standard dredge. It does seem so far that more monkfish, slightly more efficient at catching monkfish, but less yellowtail and less summer flounder. And again, there are a bunch of tables and figures in the document related to that. So the first decision today, and then I'll take a break, is basically no action to not require the turtle dredge or to require it through this framework. The advisors and committee motions are on the board. They both support adoption of the turtle dredge, which is the turtle dredge alternative, and the votes are there on the screen.
Dr. Pierce, we'll have the council ask some questions on this, and then my intent would be to go to the audience to ask them for their comments and questions on all of the turtle dredge issues, and then come back and let the council then work on those five decisions. Council, questions for staff? Okay. I will go to the audience. Are there any comments on the five decisions that are going to be under this? Get.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. I've been in front of this council a lot talking about sea turtles in the scallop fishery, and I think I'm here to fully support what the committee has done on this. The TDD is a great step forward for this fishery that has real measurable benefits. The alternatives for area and time requirement are strong and supported by the science, and we think that this is the way to go for this fishery. We would encourage the fishery to continue researching the TDD. there are still some unknown effects of this gear, what it does for bycatch, and what it will do when it's implemented across the fishery and not being done in experimental fisheries. So we hope that the RSA continues to investigate this and that we get updates on the implementation and the performance of this gear. But this is a strong step forward, and we support it fully. Thank you.
Anyone else? Drew.
Drew Minkiewicz, Fisheries Survival Fund. Deirdre, thanks for the handy sheet with all the options. We'll just go through our preference on five. Fisheries Survival Fund supports alternative 2.1.2, the committee motion to approve the TDD. I think it's the right step forward. As far as the spatial boundary, Fisheries Survival Fund supports the committee motion of the 71 West line. It's the proper line that actually separates from where the actual turtle encounters have happened to where they haven't happened, and also doesn't interfere with the fishery the way the current chain rule line kind of cuts right through where people take trips on the other side and makes it confusing, where the 71 West line is a much better design for a management line. For the seasonality, Fisheries Survival Fund supports the AP and committee motion of from May 1st to October 31st, as this covers all the known interactions of the time frame. That's a correct statement, right? Because I know there's some confusion about that, but May 1st to October 31st?
In the scallop fishery.
In all known interactions in the scallop fishery. And then on the who it should apply to, the Fisheries Survival Fund supports the AP and committee motion of all limited access vessels and all general category vessels with a 10.5 inch or higher, 10.5 foot or larger dredge. And implementation, Fisheries Survival Fund supports option two for a 1 year implementation date of the TDD, because there's only about four firms that make these dredges right now, and so we just need some time to be able to actually have these built up for the fleet to have them implemented. So a more immediate implementation time isn't really feasible, and although we don't want to drag it out too far, because obviously we want to, the agency to know this is going to be placed and being used as they consider the new biological opinion that they're going to be writing as a result of the decision to create a distinct population segment in the Northwest Atlantic. So we want to make sure that we get credit for this in the new RPMs that will be resulting from that new buyout. And that's our position in a nutshell. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Back to the council. Dr. Pierce.
I move on behalf of the committee that the council approve adopt section 2.1.2, the TDD requirement alternative with adjustments made by the advisory panel related to the dredge requirements.
Committee motion, no second required. Discussion. Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Sixteen in favor, opposed, abstention, one. 16-01. The motion carries. Dr. Pierce.
Decision 2 is relative to the TDD spatial boundary options, and Deirdre has some words regarding that.
Yeah, Karen, it's okay if you don't flip back. Decision 2, if you go back to my slides, just quickly reviews it. I have one slide. Option 1 is 71 West, and option 2 is actually the line that was required in the reasonable and prudent measures that the council has adopted in recent scallop framework actions related to an effort limit. And again, both the advisors and committee support option one, 71 West Line. And we would note, depending on what alternative you pick later for vessels required to use it, this boundary difference does become an issue primarily for the limited access general category vessels, because there is a segment of the fleet out of southern New England that fishes in 539 and 537, and that's basically the difference between those two boundaries in southern New England. But right now the committee's not supportive of an alternative that would require small dredges to use this dredge. So if you stick with option three for vessels in terms of the vessel choice, that would be all limited access vessels and general category vessels greater than 10.5 feet, then those smaller dredges that do fish in that area would be exempt from the TDD. That was noted as one of the major issues in deciding which boundary to go with. That's it.
As noted, the advisory panel and the committee support option one for the reasons specified by Deirdre. Therefore, I would make a motion on behalf of the committee that the council adopt section 2.1.2.1.1, option one, related to the TDD spatial boundary, 71 degrees west.
Committee motion, no second required. Discussion. Seeing no hands, I will call the question. All those in favor so indicate. Sixteen in favor. Opposed? Abstention? 1-16-01. Dr. Pierce.
The next decision is on TDD seasonal options. Deirdre.
There are three options for this. The first is June 1 through October 31st. That's a five-month seasonal requirement for the TDD. Option 2 is May through October, and option 3 is May through November. So they're each just a month longer than the one before it. There is a pretty long section in Document 1A where the PDT pulled together everything that we could related to loggerhead distribution, and that information was used by the PDT to come up with these ranges of options in terms of seasonal restrictions. And the economic impact section that's noted on the slide, tables 9 through 11, does have some useful tables about how much effort is expected to shift based on these months. But in general, because they're pretty long in length, we believe in general once a vessel makes this investment, since it's a pretty significant investment, they're likely going to leave that dredge on their vessel and fish with it all year, provided they don't fish in really harder bottom areas where they would switch back to a different dredge further north of the required boundary. So in general, we don't see major impacts or differences of impacts between these different options, because many times if the vessel goes and makes the investment, they're likely not going to take it off just for a month difference in general. The AP and committee motions are on the board, and both groups supported option two.
I move on behalf of the committee that the council adopt option two, adopt section 2.1.2.2.2, option two, May 1 through October 31st, TDD seasonal option.
Committee motion, no second required. Discussion.
Thanks. I would just point out a couple of things on this, the May through October versus May through November. Deirdre has pointed out that it's likely that people wouldn't change dredges anyway after October. However, when we're looking at it, we're going to analyze just the time period in which it is actually required. And so to get that extra benefit or get the credit, in a sense, for that extra benefit, it would have to be the longer time period. Also, as mentioned, that May through November is the same as the current chain mat season. And so we're introducing a potential area of confusion for people and making this a little more complex than it needs to be if we don't use the same season. And then finally, although it's certainly true that the observed takes have only occurred during the June through October, there's evidence, there is some evidence out there that there's overlap before and after that time period. And, of course, every year is different, and so we never quite know when the migration might be. So I think there's a lot of value in thinking about whether the May through November makes more sense.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, to Pat's point, the committee did vote 1-7 to not adopt option 3. However, Pat makes some very good observations, and the points that she makes are described in the framework regarding the merits of going from May 1st through November 30th. The turtle chain requirement, Pat mentioned that, and it is acknowledged, recognized in the framework document. The uncertainty that exists regarding the movement of the turtles, that is also acknowledged in the document, and it is highlighted in the framework that May through November is even more precautionary for turtles. So it is the most precautionary step that can be taken. Nevertheless, the committee felt that enough protection would be afforded by going with option 2. Consequently, that is the option you have before you.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We did have that discussion at the committee and recognized that the differences between the chain mat requirements and the ones proposed here. And the feedback that we got from the industry and the AP is that they would like to see consistency amongst those regulations, both with area and length of time for the requirement. And they'd prefer them to be the ones that we just proposed instead of the other areas. And I can't really speak to what all of the concerns were. Some of it was the spatial boundaries of the chain mat are considered problematic for a couple of reasons, which I'd look to industry to describe better than I can. And we also felt that, the combination of these two provide a lot of protection for turtles. And we did go with the observed takes. I mean, it could be adjusted in the future, but we felt that it was sufficient at the time, particularly given the interest in bringing the regulations together for both at some point.
It's really hard to compete with the Sound of Music, I know that. further committee discussion? Ron, come on up just to this point. Can you sing Edelweiss for us while you're there?
Ron Smallwoods, Fisheries Survival Fund. We have a lot of turtles with satellite tags on them now, and it's giving us a much better idea when they're overlapped with the scallop fishery. We find that they're coming up on, they go offshore, they come up in the Gulf Stream, and they come on to the shelf. They're in the scallop areas in May, though we haven't had a take until sometime in June. So we know they're there in May, and we think it's appropriate to put the gear regulation in May. On the flip side, they're pretty much out of the scallop areas by mid-October. And on one hand, it would seem that, well, why not just be conservative and extend the turtle season, even though the science doesn't support that, it's just precautionary. Well, it's because we're concerned that once you set something in stone, such as the current boundary line and the current season, that it's used for other reasons. And, for example, controlling effort as a turtle measure. And we just don't, November is a very important month for the fishery, and we just don't want to see the turtle season extended to the point where there's effort controls applied. So it's not, the industry is afraid of making November a turtle season. Regarding the line, it's on the hard bottom in George's Bank, there's a safety issue when you're fishing the turtle dredge and turtle chains, more so turtle chains than the dredge. If you're ever on board a vessel, when they're in those areas that have cobble and small boulder and lots of large scallops, that gear is hanging in the air, and they have to shake it up and down, up and down, up and down, and it's really frightening, not to mention just the wear and tear. So the industry would prefer the turtle season reflect the science, which is November 1st would be the end of turtle season, and that the boundary would, again, reflect where the turtles occur, and that would be the 70, 71 West line. And that's supported by the satellite data. Thank you.
Thank you. Council, additional comments? Call a question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Opposed. Abstention. 1. 15-01, the motion carries. Dr. Pierce.
Decision 4 is about the turtle deflector dredge vessel options. Deirdre.
Again, there are three vessel options on slide 11 of the presentation. The first one would be that it would only be required for limited access vessels. That's all permit categories, full-time, part-time, and occasional. Option 2 would be all vessels. That's all limited access vessels and limited access IFQ vessels, limited access general category IFQ vessels. Again, all permit categories. Option 3 is a little bit different. It would be all limited access vessels, again, all permits and all dredge sizes. And then for limited access general category IFQ vessels, it would only be required to have the turtle deflector dredge if you have an IFQ vessel that uses a dredge greater than 10 foot 6 inches. So vessel general category IFQ vessels with a dredge width smaller than that would be exempted if option 3 is what's selected. Both the advisors and committee supported option 3. And then I just have one or two more slides related to this topic. I'm not sure if I can do it in this format that it's you just advanced it for me. So there's a table that I have on the screen, which gives you a better sense of the number of permits by dredge width for each of those permit categories, so you can get a sense of how many vessels would be exempt if you go forth and adopt option 3. And you'll see the arrow there on the top. And essentially, in terms of the general category fishery, this is active vessels. We focused on active vessels since these are the ones we would expect would actually potentially make these investments compared to vessels that received a general category IFQ permit but are probably leasing out their quota or not using it. So of the 179 active general category vessels in 2010, 85 of them do have a dredge width greater than 10 foot 6 inches. So the vessels to the left of that arrow would be exempt under option 3. And again, about half of the catch is coming from those vessels. In terms of the limited access fishery, this gives you a sense of the breakdown in terms of dredge width, but again, under option 3, currently it would be all limited access vessels, all permit categories would be required. So those 20 to 30 vessels of the limited access sector that do have dredges smaller than 10.5 feet, they would be required to comply with this TDD regardless. The only thing I would point out, it's a little technical, but it hasn't come up yet. There are five elements of this dredge. And the fifth element is what's been called a bump out. It's one element of the dredge that helps if a turtle gets caught in the corner of a dredge. By having the bump out, it provides more space for the turtle to escape. When you have a dredge width that gets shorter and shorter, it becomes not feasible to have these bump outs on either side of the dredge. So actually in the language, if you look in the framework document, if you are a vessel with a dredge width smaller than 10.5 feet, you would not have to comply with the bump out provision, but you would have to comply with all the other provisions of the turtle deflector dredge. There are 5 in total. So this just gives you a sense of how many vessels we're talking about. I have a little more information in the document about where these vessels are from and so forth. But in general, a lot of the general category vessels with these larger dredges tend to be in the New York, New Jersey area, although there are about over 20 of them in the state of Massachusetts that would be under Option 3 required to invest in the turtle deflector dredge if they wanted to fish in that season and area that you just adopted.
I would move on behalf of the committee that the council adopt section 2.1.2.3.3, option 3, all limited access vessels and all limited access general category vessels that use a dredge greater than or equal to 10 feet 6 inches would be required to use a TDD.
Committee motion doesn't require a second. Discussion. Call the question. All those in favor, so indicate. 16. Opposed? Abstention? 1. 16-01. Motion passes. Dr. Pierce.
Decision 5 is with regards to the implementation options for the turtle deflector dredge. Deirdre.
Again, there are 3 options because we love options. Option 1 is 90 to 180 days, and this is basically the fastest possible alternative that was considered. Option 2 would be 1 year after implementation of Framework 23, and Option 3 is 2 years after implementation of Framework 23. In general, the impacts related to the TDD timing options kind of look at the balance between we know we want to do this as soon as possible, to provide that conservation benefit for turtles, and also related to the timing of the biological opinion review that the agency is likely going to be engaged in this year. On the other hand, we have to weigh that with what's realistic. The advisors spent a lot of time on this topic, and before the meeting, phone calls were made to the people making these dredges, and I think the committee was pretty confident that they had done the research basically to support option 2 in terms of being able to actually produce and build all of these dredges and getting them up and down the coast for the people that still would need to purchase them. There is a good amount of the fleet already using this turtle deflector dredge, but definitely not the majority yet. So quite a bunch of dredges would need to be built. So 1 year was, I think, across the board, the option that most people felt comfortable with, kind of with that balance of as soon as possible but actually feasible.
Yeah, Deirdre's done a good job describing the pros and the cons. The committee was, of course, as aggressive as it could possibly be with regards to protection of turtles. That was very clear from our discussions and from the motions that we made. However, we did realize we had to be realistic, and the decision document does a good job describing the logic for option 2. So I would make a motion on behalf of the committee that the council adopt section 2.1.2.4.2, option 2, the TDD requirement being 1 year after Framework 23 is implemented.
Committee motion, no second required. Discussion. Dave Gaethel.
I noticed the AP wasn't unanimous in putting this forward, and I just wanted to know if anybody has done a calculation of roughly how many dredges have to be built times the number of people that build them, and how many are they going to have to turn out a week here to do this. I just want to make sure we're not locking ourselves into something that turns out to be unrealistic.
Yes, that's exactly what the advisors did, and they did have that discussion. I don't want to put the numbers out in case I make a mistake, but there's roughly four different people that are making it now. There may be more in the next year once this is required or seems like it's going to be required if it's approved. So of the four places that build them, I think roughly 10% of the fleet already uses one, so people were comfortable with the math that they would be able to do it.
Anyone else?
Only just to be complete, I'm sorry, the only other point that was made was there was some concern or one person raised, if you extend the time, it would give more flexibility. There were some concerns that if it's too fast, the price could be affected and people could get stuck at the end and have to pay some larger amount for it. But those are, you know, we don't really get into that much detail in the document. But, of course, the longer you give, the more flexibility there would be for that kind of thing. But there is that weighing it with wanting to get it on the books as soon as possible.
And there's always the issue of flexibility versus procrastination. I mean, if you put a two-year time limit on it, I'll be willing to bet there'll be a lot of people won't order one until a month before they need them. If you put a one-year time period on it, it's going to be the same thing, 6 months, whatever. But there is, you know, it takes some time to build a dredge or build a net, whatever it is. And I just want to make sure that, you know, they have to turn out, each company has to turn out three a week or something, that's a, you know, viable number that can be achieved.
Anyone else? Call the question. All those in favor so indicate. Sixteen in favor, opposed, abstention, one. 16-01. Dr. Pierce.
Decision 6 pertains to the Northern Gulf of Maine. Recommended actions from the committee. And there are a number of slides to be provided by Deirdre that describe this particular decision that actually has a few elements to it. And after she's through with her presentation, I will make a motion that will fold in all aspects of the Northern Gulf of Maine alternative.
Thank you. So moving from issue number one, we're now on the second issue that was identified as a priority for this framework, and that's the Northern Gulf of Maine Management Program. And it had a pretty specific charge. It was basically raised that there's an inconsistency that we know about, that a lot of vessels with a federal Northern Gulf of Maine permit currently fish in state waters, and we've known that since the program began in Amendment 11. So the request was that from the state of Maine, since the state of Maine is working on their state fishery program in an effort to make sure that vessels from the state of Maine, all vessels, including vessels with federal permits, have access to what they hope to be a recovering inshore state fishery. The request specifically is that if a vessel with a federal Northern Gulf of Maine permit wants to leave on a trip-by-trip basis, they can declare before they leave if they're going to stay exclusively in state waters. And if they stay exclusively in state waters and they declare that before they leave, the catch from that trip would not be applied against the federal Northern Gulf of Maine TAC. If they think they're going to go into federal waters at all, then they would declare a federal trip, and all of that catch, whether some of it was in state and some of it was in federal, would come against the federal Northern Gulf of Maine TAC. So that's the request specifically that came up last year and years prior. So that's the alternative in the document, that basically if you go with alternative 232, any vessel with a federal Northern Gulf of Maine permit could decide on a trip-by-trip basis whether they're going to stay in state waters, and if they are, that catch would not be deducted from the federal TAC. So if you remember, there's a federal TAC of 70,000 pounds in the Northern Gulf of Maine area, and it's deducted, and as soon as it's caught, there's no fishing in the Northern Gulf of Maine area by any federal vessel, state or federal waters. That's what's on the books now. So the sub-options related to this is there's each state has different rules in state waters, and there's one alternative, option one, that this would be applicable for vessels homeported from the state of Maine only. The second option would be that all vessels with a federal Northern Gulf of Maine permit if this alternative is selected, would also have this ability to fish exclusively in state waters and not have it count against the federal TAC, provided that that particular state also allows that activity, because that would need to occur. So the PDT's addition to this basically was that if this alternative is selected, the council may want to consider reducing the federal TAC, because right now the federal TAC is basically elevated because we know that a significant portion of catch comes from state waters. We've always had a hard time knowing exactly how much because the reporting system is very difficult to break down state and federal. But basically, the one federal resource survey we have of the Northern Gulf of Maine region suggests a hard TAC of 31,000 pounds, but we've elevated that in recent years to 70,000 to basically notice the fact that we know a lot of this catch is coming out of state waters, so we've bumped up the federal TAC. But if this alternative is selected and that catch in the future is not deducted from the federal TAC, you may want to consider reducing the federal TAC, basically so you do not over-harvest the federal portion of the resource. So there's a table on the screen that gives you a sense of the number of vessels. Again, these are active vessels with the Northern Gulf of Maine permit and by state. So you can get an idea in 2009 versus 2010 by home port state. I'm sorry, primary port is in this table, but the document has both. They're not very different. To give you an idea of these vessels and where they're from. So the first option for states, again, would only affect the state of Maine, and the second option in terms of which vessels would be impacted would be all of those vessels. In general, I'm sorry, that table is all permits. Out of that amount, the 120 or so, only about 20 of them are actually active during both of those years. And just so you're aware, the catch in Northern Gulf of Maine, while the TAC is 70,000 pounds, catch each year for the last 3 years has been closer to the 10 to 15,000 pound range. So it's clearly not getting close to the TAC, and the state of Maine recognizes that in their requests about this. This is not a pressing, urgent issue for today, but they believe it's something that can be fixed now so that if some resource does come back in the state of Maine, it won't be something that has to be fixed later. So that is, I think, in a nutshell, the slides related to this first issue related to Northern Gulf of Maine. The motions are on the board. This is the one place I was mentioning that the advisors had a different motion or preferred option than the committee. The advisors didn't have a very long discussion about this topic, but they actually went with no action. I think they primarily, if I could speak for them, it was mostly that there's a lot of issues, this doesn't seem pressing, and there was some concern about reporting in general when you have this state-federal issue going on. So they were comfortable leaving things alone. The committee motion, however, went with alternative 232, which would be to adopt the Northern Gulf of Maine alternative, and as David mentioned, their committee motion included the specific vessels that would be covered by that, as well as reducing that Northern Gulf of Maine TAC to 31,000 pounds was their final preferred recommendation.
And what I was going to do was to go to the audience for comments on those two decisions, and then we'll bring it back to the committee. Tobe first, and then Gary.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Tobe Braun, and I worked for 4 years with the Department of Marine Resources. I left recently to start my own company. While I was at DMR, I worked during all of that time to try to correct inconsistencies in federal Northern Gulf of Maine management, and that's why I'm here today. I've spoken before you several times, and I also submitted a letter that you should have received at lunchtime that outlines my arguments. I've actually been informed since that time that one of the things that I was hoping to accomplish is not accomplishable today, so I'm just going to focus on what we can do today, which is to hopefully approve alternative 2.3.2 and also to take no action in terms of the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC itself. The Northern Gulf of Maine management area was created in acknowledgement of the fact that the area experiences periodic booms and busts, and it was busted during the qualifying years for Amendment 11. The resource does fluctuate dramatically in that area, and there's reason to believe that the state water resource fluctuates independently from the federal resource. That wouldn't be a problem if the state water fishery could be managed independently from the federal fishery, but right now, Northern Gulf of Maine federal management poses unnecessary constraints on general category fishermen's abilities to participate in the state water fishery. Amendment 11 requires that the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC be based exclusively on the federal waters resource, despite the fact that state water landings of general category fishermen are applied against it. When it was created, DMR argued against this accounting system, as landings of general category fishermen were split roughly 50-50 between state waters and federal waters. So then that meant that the TAC was being set at roughly 50% of what we thought it should be. You might wonder, where's the fire here? You know, what's the problem, given the fact that the TAC hasn't even been approached in recent years? But I believe the potential and the imminence of the problem are illustrated by the fact that although state water landings represented 54% of general category fishermen's landings in 2008, they represented 84% of general category fishermen's Northern Gulf of Maine landings in 2010. Maine Department of Marine Resources has made some significant changes to the management of its state water fishery, some huge improvements. We fought hard to make those changes, and those changes are starting to bear fruit, and I believe all fishermen in Maine should be able to benefit from the improvements that have resulted in the fishery. I don't think fishermen should be prevented from participating in a state water fishery simply because they hold a general category permit. It does not make sense to base a TAC on the entire Northern Gulf of Maine based on an area that represents 16% of landings. The problem cannot be solved by setting a TAC based on that much smaller federal resource and then including an overage to account for state water landings when state water landings are actually 84% of landings. I think it's good that Days at Sea fishermen can get around this inconsistency by declaring a state water-only trip. I think general category fishermen should be afforded that same opportunity. Alternative 2.3.2 would start the fix because it would allow Northern Gulf of Maine permitted vessels to do that. I think that the next action we get to should somehow enable IFQ fishermen to do that, but apparently we can't do that today, so I'll just stick with what we can do, which is approving alternative 2.3.2. In terms of what's going on in Maine state waters, I will just briefly say I think it's relevant that Maine's Cobscook Bay, which is a small but important bay, the very corner of the state of Maine, obviously in state waters, in 2009, the harvestable biomass in that bay was over 190,000 pounds. In 2010, that had increased 40% to over 287,000 pounds. That's one bay in Maine. If the federal waters of the Northern Gulf of Maine can only support a very small TAC, then so be it. I would not argue with what is a responsible management decision pertaining to federal waters. But I don't think that the accounting system of that TAC should prevent general category fishermen from being able to participate in the sustainably managed Maine state waters fishery. Maine is now managing its state waters responsibly. Approval of alternative 2.3.2 would not pose a risk to the federal resource, although there are additional changes that I think should be undertaken, and the first and foremost of those is in a future action allowing IFQ vessels to declare a state water-only trip. I believe today alternative 2.3.2 should be approved so that Northern Gulf of Maine fishermen can declare state water-only trips and not have those trips constrained by a TAC based on a much smaller federal water resource. So that's why I approve of 2.3.2. In terms of the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC itself, the PDT has recommended lowering the TAC to 31,000 pounds because they say that an overage to account for state water landings would no longer be needed. Well, an overage to account for state water landings by Northern Gulf of Maine permittees would no longer be needed, but IFQ vessels are still going to have their state water landings applied against the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC. The TAC right now is set at 70,000 pounds. It's going to be reevaluated in an upcoming year. If we leave it at 70,000 pounds, it would stay that way only for 2012. Maine's closures, which now close 20% of state waters, are due to open in 2012. I would request that you just leave the TAC where it is right now, and if you want to lower it in the future, you can look into doing that in an upcoming framework. Thank you.
Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Libby. I am a Maine fisherman. I participated in the Maine scallop fishery. I do have a northern Gulf of Maine offshore, I guess, day permit or whatever it is, because I don't use it much anymore. Never really fished much in federal waters, but did a lot of fishing in state waters. And I kind of had just a question about the federal stock and state stock. I was wondering if anyone knew if they were considered separate stocks or the same stock.
Dee, do you want to try tackling that one? Or?
Well, there's a lot of new research into that. The state of Maine has been funded through the Scallop RSA program to survey the federal portion, and the state does do the state portion. Right now, the federal stock assessment of the scallop resource does not include the state waters as part of the resource, but they are under the same unit in terms of one can't ignore the other. I know it's not a very good answer, but I think that's the best I could give you. That helps.
Yeah. So I guess I'm in favor of kind of letting the state fishery be prosecuted by itself with its own tack. But on the other hand, from the answer I got, it sounds like they are connected. So I think there should be provisions in there for state boats, like is proposed, to be able to declare in one or the other. But sounds to me like the stock should stay, the actual quota for the area should stay somewhat connected until we do have better data. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Hatch.
Gary Hatch, Owl's Head. On this, I think, is a good idea. The only thing that I'll comment on is that on the 70,000 pounds, where we're not anywhere near catching it, and the usage of the permits are quite low because we're still rebuilding. My only concern would be is that in the next, say, 5 years, we're probably going to have to revisit this again anyway, but I just feel that if our offshore fishery comes back to any part of what it was, say, in the 80s, that the 70,000 pounds would probably be more than adequate for that fishery. And as we all know how slow things can move through this council, that maybe we'd be better to just leave it alone. We're not jeopardizing anything, and should our fishery come back, the biggest thing that we'll need to do is preserve the spawning biomass that produced our fishery to begin with, so that we don't end up in the same situation where the big boats needed meat count. They came up and cleaned out our spawn stock, and now we've been 15 years trying to get it back. So I would say just go with this Gulf of Maine thing and let the boys fish inside or out, and leave the 70,000 pound as a preferred alternative, and I think we'll be okay. Thanks.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, before I make the motion, I need to point out a couple of things. One is a reminder, and the other is a point of information. As a reminder, the Northern Gulf of Maine program references a particular area with a rather interesting southern boundary. The southern boundary bisects Boston Harbor. So it's not the Northern Gulf of Maine per se, but still, it comes down a little bit to the south. Actually bisects the Prudential Center, but that's another run. Anyways, it bisects Boston Harbor. In addition, that is Massachusetts, the Division of Marine Fisheries, working with Marine Fisheries Advisory Commission, have been for quite a few months discussing the manner in which we will complement the actions taken by the council. We have for a while clearly understood the need for us to have some specific scallop rules and regulations for our waters that would impact non-federal permit holders. So we're on schedule for 2012 implementation, early 2012 implementation of a set of strategies that would pertain to restricting the scallop fishery in our waters. That's a point of information for the council. I would move on behalf of the committee that the council adopt Section 2.3.2, the Northern Gulf of Maine Alternative. Section 2.3.2.1.2, Option 2, all Northern Gulf of Maine vessels. And Section 2.3.2.2.2, Option 2, adjust the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC to 31,000 pounds.
That's a committee motion. Needs no second. Discussion. Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple comments and a question. First, I'd like to thank Gary and Tog for coming forward and speaking, and thank you, Dieter, for providing some context to the AP's no-action decision. But clearly, while this may not have been an important issue to the AP, it's a very important issue to a number of fishermen and communities in all of northern Gulf of Maine area. I really thank the committee for their consideration of this issue. And this, as David was just saying, this isn't just a Maine issue. We only have a quarter of the total vessels that have these permits. But I had been supportive originally of Section 2.3.3.2, but you know, reading the documents here, I understand that it's not a frameworkable item to change the state water exemption program. So, given that the accounting of the general category IFQ landings in state waters can't be addressed in this action, I have a question about how the recommendation to drop the TAC from 70,000 to 31 was derived. Did the PDT break down the difference in the landings between the Northern Gulf of Maine and the general category IFQ boats?
For the 31,000-pound recommendation, that actually is coming directly from our last framework, and that's completely based on the survey that was done of the federal resource, so not related to catch at all. That's based on that survey. That's what's estimated to be, a reasonable TAC for that area based on that survey. The PDT would prefer to wait until after this summer, because that area is going to be surveyed again, and it's been a very low surveyed area. It would be good to have 2 years to see what's going on, and then the state, as I understand, has another one going on. So our preference was to wait until we had that 2 years of information to talk about adjusting. And I wanted the council to remember that we can change the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC in any spec setting framework. It's not like do it now and we might never revisit it again. It's completely on the list of the specs when the PDT looks at all specifications. We look at this every time. So I just wanted to make sure people understood that. In terms of the catch, or I think what your question was really, what is the risk of IFQ vessels continuing to have that catch count against the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC? Because right now, if we don't do action related to that today, that catch would still count against their individual quota as well as the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC. To be honest, I can't even really put up a lot of tables about that because the data is so scarce and confidential, because that's how little it is. There's a handful of IFQ vessels that fish in the Northern Gulf of Maine area, but in terms of that right now causing this, the 31,000 pounds to go over, is pretty pretty hard thing. People would have to really be changing where they're fishing for that to be a huge risk. If that helps in terms of the what the PDT looked at, we looked at the catch of that group, and it's very small.
I would actually argue quite differently. I'd say that if that group of dedicated full-time IFQ fishermen were to fish past Macquarie Bay during any part of the Maine scallop fishery, the northern Gulf of Maine entire area would close in less than 3 weeks. I might have felt comfortable with the 31,000 had it been an equitable a measure for both the IFQ and the northern Gulf of Maine boats. But at this point, it's the nature of the beast that we can't address the IFQ boats' landings in state waters in this action. So I'm going to make a motion to amend the committee's that the preferred that the hard tack be 70,000.
Is there a second to that? Glenn? Discussion? Dave Gaisel.
Actually, discussion on the whole motion. My question is, how is this going to be enforced? Is it enforced through VMS? I mean, a federal boat has to have a VMS, but are they going to enforce the fact that they stayed in state waters by the VMS records? Or I'm just concerned with an enforceability issue here.
Terry.
All the federal boats have VMS. Our Maine Marine Patrol has multiple data ports. All the officers have computers in their trucks and on their boats. They monitor the vessels in federal waters, particularly the scallop fishery. We have a very conservative program that's actually put a fair amount of time in over the last number of years together. It's an investment of this state in our future to try to diversify the inshore fisheries. So, will there be... will there be some scallops that go over the dock unchecked? Yes, but the vast majority of them are met every day by the landing crew, and the Marine Patrol has a regular presence.
Okay, that was a concern, especially in light of Captain DeCola's report about the issue going the other way with state boats fishing in federal waters, and they don't have a VMS. So apparently, the only way to catch them is to have people on the water. So. I'll vote for it, but I do note the concern with the one-way nature of this, that the federal boats have VMS, and, you can probably enforce those rules, but you can't enforce the rules against state boats that decide to go into federal waters.
We have four patrol boats over, in the 45-foot range that work year-round.
Further discussion? Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad to see that this says regardless of where this is from, because I would think if it was for Maine state boats, Gene, I don't think we can do that, because wouldn't you be treating people from a different state differently? And under Magnuson, aren't we supposed to treat everybody the same? So this is better anyway. And my other concern is, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this different than every other federal plan where it says if you're a federal boat, you abide by the federal and state waters? Why are we doing this contrary to every plan that the Mid-Atlantic Council does, that the New England Council does, and probably every other council in the country? I mean, I can understand here, the situation, but this is contrary to every other plan that we have.
If you wanted to make a comment or not. Further discussion? Seeing none, call for a vote. All those in favor of the amendment so indicate. Fourteen in favor. Opposed? Two opposed. Abstention? One. Motion to amend carries 14-2-1. Now we're on to the main motion as amended. Further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor so indicate. Fourteen in favor, opposed, two, abstention, one. The main motion as amended carries 14-2-1. Dr. Pierce.
To decision 7 regarding whether limited access general category IFQ vessels can fish in state waters and have their catch not apply against the IFQ. Deirdre.
Thank you, David. I just have one slide related to this. Decision 7, as it's drafted currently in the framework, would the alternative, as was put in by the committee, would be to allow a limited access general category IFQ vessel to fish in state waters, and that catch would not apply against that individual's IFQ. That was the alternative developed by the committee. When the PDT started working on it, we learned that, as written, this would require an amendment, because to do this, it would require changes to the state water exemption program on the scallop FMP, which is currently not a frameworkable item. So the PDT's recommendation was to move this to the considered and rejected section of this document, since it's not an amendment. The advisors went with no action on this based on that input. The committee preferred to wait until this council meeting to potentially have a little more discussion and understanding of that issue and why it's not frameworkable. So they decided to kind of wait on this issue. From the correspondence we've gotten so far and from the what Terry was just mentioning, it sounds like rather than what's in the document, the request is to allow IFQ vessels to have the same provision you just adopted, where they would declare on a trip-by-trip basis to have that catch would still count against their individual quota, but it would not count against the Northern Gulf of Maine quota, which is different than what's in the document presently. And at the committee level, we didn't talk about that. It seems that that's actually potentially frameworkable, since it's a change to the Northern Gulf of Maine program rather than a change to the state water exemption program. So I think that's where this issue left off. What's currently in the document seems that it can't stay in the document, but whether your change to the TAC in the motion before addresses your issue and you don't want to explore that other one, I'm not sure.
As Deirdre indicated, there was no committee motion on this issue. It will be up to the council to determine whether or not it wishes to have this allowance or to entertain some other action relative to it.
So the option would be, I guess there'd be several. One, the council could just make a vote today to put this into the considered but rejected file. The council could also remand this issue back to the committee outside of this framework to bring some sort of decision back to I guess that would require a new action. Or it would have to go into another framework action or an amendment. Yeah. So I would guess that those are the two options that we have here.
Yes.
Committee discussion. Mary Beth.
Just for clarity as far as what's in the document, the AP recommended no action. The committee preferred to wait. So for the actual alternative in the document, I'd make a motion that we that it be considered but rejected. And I'm losing sight of the actual number here. Wait one moment. I guess it would be section 2.3.3.2 in this framework be considered but rejected. And because it does require an amendment and then sort of separate the two issues about whether or not we would entertain something different.
Is there a second? Jim Odlin. Discussion. Mary Beth.
I think that eventually to have some, you know, really clean split between the two resources and the fisheries would be helpful. But at this particular point, the advice we have is that it takes an amendment and, you know, it might just be incremental steps to get there and we can consider it at a future time.
Further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor so indicate. Opposed? Abstention? 1. 16-0-1. Dr. Pierce.
We are next on Decision 8, which is Section 2.4, Modification to the Vessel Monitoring System. Deirdre.
Again, just one slide here related to this topic. There's the no-action alternative, which would leave everything the same, and this has to do with when a scallop vessel declares into the scallop fishery. Currently, a vessel is required to declare from port or from a predefined port identification or marker or buoy. There's a list of them that are approvable. The alternative, the VMS alternative in the document would be rather than a vessel having to declare into the scallop fishery from port, they could declare into the fishery just west of the VMS demarcation line. And this is how things used to be, but in more recent years it has changed back to port, and the scallop vessels came to the council notifying this as a safety issue because this is such a spatial fishery and there are access area trips where vessels have to steam sometimes, you know, 2 days or so, 1 day, 2 days. They would then have to declare, they would be declared out of a fishery, steam up to that area, then go into a port that they're not familiar with to declare into the fishery and then start their trip, whereas this way they could steam to the grounds, go right inside the demarcation line, start their trip that way, and not have to go into port. At first, we looked into the concerns potentially about increased effort from taking away steaming time, but when the PDT got to the bottom of it, we're pretty confident that the estimates of catch for per day at sea would not really change that much because currently we use days at sea charged already in all of our formulas for catch per day. So we're already using the time that a vessel crosses in and out of the demarcation line and not from the time from the port. So there were no major concerns there. Positive impacts are expected on the fishery just from saved time and costs of having to fuel back to the port and potentially safety issues that come with that. Again, both the advisors and committees support the VMS alternative in this document. By the way, the enforcement committee did review all of the measures in this framework, and they were also comfortable with this option as well.
Dr. Pierce.
I would move on behalf of the committee that the council adopt Section 2.4.2, the VMS alternative.
Committee motion, no second required. I will go to the audience first. Since we haven't covered this subject, are there any comments on this? Back to the committee. Oh, Bill. Sorry, didn't see you.
Bill Semro, Northeast VMS Program Manager. I think this is a good idea. I will clarify something. as I understand it anyway, the requirement to declare from port has always been in the reg. I may be misspeaking, but I don't think so. The VMS team had adopted a position where we allowed vessels to declare from inside the demarcation line. Whether they were steaming from another port to closer to the fishing grounds and going inside DMARC and changing their code at that point, or if they misdeclared a trip and they wanted to come back in inside the demarcation line and declare, we allowed that. However, that the reason that changed was the Northeast regulation said declare from port, so we were informed that we must abide by that regulation and remind vessel operators that they had to declare from a port. If you're going to do this for the scallop fishery, and I can see the advantage to doing that, you ought to just consider it for all the fisheries. I mean, if the issue is safety, then do it for all the fisheries, but don't do it just for scallop. I realize it's this came up in a scallop committee, but let's look broader than that. I think you can't say it's a safety issue for the scallop fishery and then tell the multi-species or other fisheries that, your message is that it's not. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. So I'd be happy to answer any, questions about VMS, but I think you got to look a little broader than this.
Paul.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think it is a little broader than just safety when you talk about other fisheries. I think one of the most difficult things the PDT has is determining in an effort control system what is the catch on a day at sea based on all different types of vessels. And the LPUE, or the catch per unit effort, I think is in scallops has been one of the most difficult things to do in history, determining what the right day at sea is. Am I right, Dee? You've always had difficulty doing that. So this business of, we think we have it or something. So it's more than just safety, Bill.
Anyone else? Thank you, Bill. Seeing no comments, I'll call a question. All those in favor of the motion, so indicate. Fifteen in favor. Opposed? One. Abstention? One. 15-1-1. The motion carries. Dr. Pierce.
All right. Next we have decisions 9 and 10. They are related regarding section 2.2, review and revise the accountability measures for Yellowtail Flounder sub-ACL. Now, this particular issue has taken up a great deal of time of the advisors as well as the committee. Nevertheless, we've been able to make some decisions, and they will be brought forward in the form of motions after Deirdre takes you through her slides. There's a bit more discussion needed to clarify why these decisions have been made. First, of course, will be acting on number 9, leading up to that. Deirdre, if you would, please.
So focusing on decision 9, related to the Yellowtail AMs, this charge part of the framework was to review and revise the AMs for the Yellowtail sub-ACL, and we looked at two separate things. First, we looked at refining the current Yellowtail AM seasonal schedule. Currently, the seasonal AM closure for the limited access fishery has a very particular schedule, and we looked at refining that seasonal schedule with a little more time and data. So that's the first section. The second group of alternatives is related to developing a separate accountability measure for the general category fishery, which is currently exempt from the Yellowtail AM as approved in Amendment 15. The final thing the committee asked us to do, the PDT described all of the proactive accountability measures that are either have already been adopted under this FMP or through voluntary ways this fishery has reduced yellowtail bycatch over time. So this is not an active alternative that council needs to act on today, but it is described in the document. It was a request from the committee to kind of get all of that on paper so it becomes part of the process. So just to describe the no action alternative for Decision 9, because it's been a little while since we worked on Amendment 15, I have a slide or two to refresh your memory of what the no action actually is. So in Amendment 15, we developed an accountability measure for the Yellowtail sub-ACL. And what the PDT did is take all of the Yellowtail discarded amounts and divided that by all of the scallop catch from all observed trips from 2006 through 2009. And we calculated a total Yellowtail discard to scallop catch ratio for each statistical area for the entire year. Then we ranked the statistical areas from the highest D to K ratio down to the lowest, and the ones with the highest D to K ratio basically became the future Yellowtail AM closures for both the Southern New England stock as well as the Georges Bank stock. So currently, right now, if there's an overage in the first year, the following year, the limited access fishery would be restricted from fishing in either of those areas, depending on which stock was exceeded, for a certain amount of months based on whatever that overage is. And the seasonal closure schedule starts on March 1st, basically because that's the start of the fishing year. So that's what's in the regulations right now. As you know, there was a lot in Amendment 15, and we didn't always have, this was not, you know, on the front burner all the time. So with a little bit more time, the PDT was able to make a few refinements to that accountability measure as proposed in Amendment 15. We basically took more years of data, as much as we could. We didn't go any further back than 2003 because the observer program was much more spotty before then, before the industry-funded program was really widespread. And what we did this time before, we just basically took the raw data for what it was. And this time, the plan development team had time to develop a GAM model, which basically was used to smooth out the fact that there were certain years and certain months, and this observer data is a little spotty, and there are some missing cells, and there's not an observed trip for every month and every statistical area in every year. So we used this model to basically smooth the data out and account for the fact that there were significant year, area, and month effects from the observer data. We used this model and now predicted new D to K ratios, and this time, instead of just doing an annual, we did it by month. And this time, we were able to rank the months, which is before it was just an annual. Now we ranked the months with the highest D to K months, and those which should become the closures first in the schedule, rather than currently the seasonal schedule is just the start of the fishing year and it just starts. Whereas now the proposed alternative would rank things by highest yellowtail bycatch months first. So what's on the screen now is on the right-hand side in yellow is the proposed new schedule for the Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Yellowtail AM. And at first glance, it looks pretty similar for the first few months. But the major difference is that the seasons, the months that are part of the closure start to change as you get into, 3% overages and downward. And basically that's because for the Southern New England stock, the early spring and winter months is when there's highest bycatch compared to right now, the seasonal schedules would run through the spring and through the summer. And so when you make this adjustment, in some cases it was noted at the committee level that sometimes it looks like the closures are actually longer, and well, that's not a good thing. But what's pointed out is that the months that are selected are actually sometimes lower scallop meat weight months. So in some cases, even while a closure may seem longer, in terms of the percent of scallop catch coming from that area for the year, it could actually be less, even though it's a longer closure. So there's a lot of tables in the document that get through the impacts of these different things. But in general, the theory behind it is to close the months with the highest yellowtail bycatch rates first, whereas now we're not exactly doing that. So it should be a more effective AM compared to the no action, just in doing that alone. For Georges Bank, it's a similar strategy. The same method is applied. You have two schedules for years when closed area two is open versus years when it's closed. If you remember, the AM for Georges Bank is the statistical area 562, which encompasses all of the closed area two access area. These schedules are very different depending on whether the area is open or closed. And you'll see the schedule here is very different than the no action. The highest bycatch rate months from the new analysis are actually in the fall and then followed by the winter. And this is similar to what the industry has been telling us over time. So if you look at the percent catch shifts caused by this schedule versus the current one, they're really very different, and this is where you'll see that hopefully improved efficiency for yellowtail and reduced impacts on the industry because the schedule is set up more to go for those high bycatch months first. So I think, let me see if I have any. So in terms of impacts of the Southern New England schedule, I've probably mentioned this already in what I've said, but the Southern New England Mid-Atlantic closure, the proposed action is primarily in the early spring and winter first, rather than starting with March 1st and going through the summer and the spring when meat weights are their best. And that's why there's beneficial impacts expected on the scallop resource. These are the specific tables that explain the different impacts on catch. And when the advisors reviewed all this information, they, too, agreed that the proposed schedule, while they didn't spend a ton of time on it, in theory followed the rationale for it and supported revising the schedule so that it was as effective as possible at reducing yellowtail bycatch. Similarly, the Georges Bank impacts, those do change quite a bit. Now they would start in the fall, followed by the winter, compared to just starting March 1st now. And I think I've mentioned all of this. So these are the different impacts. These are the motions on the screen. Again, the advisors are supporting revising the schedule for both Georges Bank and Mid-Atlantic, and the committee agrees. There is one note related to this as we were talking about this, and the fact that the 2010 yellowtail bycatch estimates for that sub-ACL was basically the first time we've been under this process so far, and the estimate kept changing, and we had meetings over the summer and recently, and the number kept changing, and it became pretty apparent that we may want to have some sort of flexibility in this system to allow basically the agency is going to have to make a determination whether accountability measures trigger or not, and that's going to be based on a preliminary estimate, and then maybe 6 months later or so there would be a final estimate. And currently, in the scallop plan, there's no mechanism to make any kind of adjustment to that, either for the scallop AM or the yellowtail AM. So you get what you get from the preliminary one. There are other plans in the region that have that flexibility. So this did come up as a big topic during discussions, whether the council wants to do something with that related to this topic or not today. I believe it's frameworkable, but it didn't come up at the committee level very specifically.
Dr. Pierce.
I have a motion to make and then another motion, not on behalf of the committee, but a motion that relates to the point that Deirdre just made. I'd like to do that before we go on to decision number 10, since it is very, very relevant to decision number 9. Before I make the motion on behalf of the committee, I should highlight the fact that the plan development team put a lot of work into this. Frankly, they were given a rather difficult challenge. And I think the committee tend to be rather amazed at their ability to provide us with the information we request. Good work on their part. As Deirdre indicated, the industry, the advisory panel has also supported this revised schedule. So, on behalf of the committee, I would recommend the council adopt section 2.2.1.2. The refined yellowtail flounder AM seasonal closure schedule for Southern New England, Mid-Atlantic, and Georges Bank. It's a little bit different from what's on the screen. I'm just adding the That's the gist of it. Adopt section 2.2.1.2 refined yellowtail flounder AM seasonal closure schedule as preferred alternative. The words are changing. You can get rid of as the preferred alternative and just say let's refine this, that the council adopts section 2.2.1.2, refined yellowtail flounder AM seasonal closure schedule, get rid of the, okay, get rid of the, that text, okay, schedule, get rid of that text, and then add to it for Southern New England, Mid-Atlantic, and Georges Bank. So that is the motion on behalf of the committee.
Committee motion, no second required. Did you have something else to add on this? You're all set for now.
It's another motion after this one.
Council, discussion? Go to the audience. Any comments on this? Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor so indicate. 16 opposed, abstention, 1. 16-01, motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, there is a need for some flexibility relative to the AMs. I've already discussed this to some degree with the regional administrator, so she knows it's coming. There are surveys being done, federal waters, state waters, regarding the distribution and abundance of sea scallops. There is always the chance, and in some cases it's not a chance, it's a certainty, that additional information regarding the size of the resource will be brought forward, indicating that the resource is increasing or decreasing. That information will likely make its way to the plan development team and even to the SSC. This council may therefore want to react to that information, whether it's good or bad, to change the accountability measures, that is to adjust them. We do that now with groundfish, but we cannot do that yet with sea scallops. I believe it is appropriate to give the regional administrator that authority similar to the authority she has with groundfish. Therefore, I would move that we add a measure to Framework 23 that would give the regional administrator authority to adjust accountability measures for scallop ACLs or yellowtail flounder sub-ACLs based on final estimates of catch. So that is my motion, Mr. Chairman, again, to provide this council with more flexibility using the authority of the regional administrator. And I've added the scallop ACLs as well as the yellowtail flounder sub-ACLs to indeed provide the maximum amount of flexibility.
Requires a second. Dave Preble, discussion.
Yeah, I'll be very, very brief here. I support this motion. I support it because of what we are going to see in item 10. I think that this gives the gives us a measure of flexibility that we are going to need.
I have Mary Beth and Jim.
Well, I guess that was my first question, is I'm not exactly sure what this motion is intended to cure. When we get to decision 10 on the limited access general category, the general category is currently exempted from accountability measures. We have a decision about whether or not we're going to do anything about that in this action, and so if we were to move this or approve this motion, and we choose to not do anything about general category vessels, then this is not effective if that's what you're trying to cure by the motion. So I just ask for clarification because I'm feeling just a little confused.
Good day, Mr. Chairman. It's not specific to the next motion. It's related to new information that may be provided to this council at any time. Certain new survey information, for example, that would suggest that the scarlet biomass is larger. Therefore, we would, through the flexibility mechanism, the regional administrator's authority to make adjustments, we would potentially not trigger an accountability measure that would result in closures. For example, we came or are coming very close. Well, I guess Deirdre wants to jump in here. And she looks pretty anxious. I may be misstating something. I always defer to her judgment on this. Well, let me stop for a second. And Deirdre, did you have a point to clarify? Go ahead.
I think so. What David's mentioning, I think, is actually a little bit different. I think the main reason that you'd want to include this or what came up at the committee meeting is not related to new information or new surveys or anything like that. This is purely that because of timing, the NIMS is going to have to tell the public whether or not they're projected to exceed an ACL, and they're going to have to make that determination before the fishing year is even over. They're going to tell us in December or January-ish, okay, we project this fishery to exceed their ACL in yellowtail or scallops. That fishing year is not even over, so they're not going to know that for sure. Data always comes in. It has nothing to do with surveys. This is just catch. So if, you know, in January they think that, yes, in fact, AM should be triggered, we think you're going to catch 120% of your yellowtail sub-ACL. Something happens later, they relook at it, the final numbers come in, their projection for those last 2 months was not what actually happened, and at the end of the year, the real final estimate of catch is 98%. Then what do we, right now, AMs would still trigger, and accountability measures would occur. There's no flexibility for when there's a final estimate available to make that adjustment.
Yeah, I apologize to the council. I am on another related issue, not specific to this motion, which has an intent described by Deirdre. I apologize.
Jim.
So I had that brought up another question. So then is this motion still relevant the way it's worded? That's one question.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It is, okay. For the purpose of what Deirdre just
yes.
described. Okay. Then I would say that you may want to consider to have this motion be a little more generic than just be specific to yellowtail, because it's likely that we're going to have additional AMs in the scallop fisheries, for instance, on windowpane flounder or something else, and that we would have to come back and revisit this. So it's just a suggestion that you look at a different bycatch ACLs or sub, you know, those type of things, so that we can dispense of this once and not have to wait for another action if we end up doing needing AMs and other species.
I definitely hear what Jim's saying. I think we do need to take the comprehensive approach that we were talking about yesterday under the priorities discussion. I guess my reservation is the word adjust. It seems to include absolutely anything. We seem to be divesting ourselves as a council of the development of ACLs and for both flounder bycatch and then the scallops themselves. Is that the... It seems sweeping.
Okay, if I may, Mr. Chairman, to address that particular point, the key words here are based on final estimates of catch, and Deirdre made it very clear in her clarification that estimates of catch could change and likely would change. So the regional administrator would be in a position then to deal with final estimates of catch instead of preliminary estimates of catch that she would use early on in the fishing year that may trigger AMs when they're not needed. So this gives her the flexibility to back away from the triggering of AMs once based on final estimates of catch. We don't find ourselves trapped by having to take action on preliminary estimates that might vary significantly from the final numbers. And I do agree with Jim's suggestion that we perhaps should be a bit more generic and not have it reference yellowtail specifically. Perhaps it should read or bycatch sub-ACLs based on final estimates of catch. That would make it generic, not specific to yellowtail. If we get into window pane, for example, this would cover that as well. We're always keen on having good estimates of catch, and eventually they do come in later than we would like, so this enables the regional administrator to respond to them. So if you would change, if there's no objection from the seconder, I would get rid of the word yellowtail and replace it with bycatch, so it becomes generic. Remove just yellowtail flounder. Make it bycatch sub-ACLs. Thank you.
Seconder okay with that? Mary Beth.
I guess one difficulty I'm having is it's proposing something that we hadn't contemplated before, so you have to sort of, you know, think of all the implications right on the spot and figure out if you're for it or against it, which makes it very difficult to do. Because I was trying to figure that out, I did miss part of what Deirdre had said, and perhaps some additional clarification, and I apologize for not catching it all, but I thought that some of the estimates of catch were actually done similar to other plans in which you have your numbers at the end of the year, but the PDT makes final estimates, you know, 6 months into year one, and then accountability measures would kick in after those estimates in year two. We have several plans that do that, but it sounded like you were describing something that was different. Do we do it differently for ACL management for directed harvest of scallops versus yellowtail? Are there variations? Is that what I'm missing? Because I thought we were doing, you know, year two implementation of AMs.
No, in the scallop fishery, they're all the next subsequent year. So the there's a schedule, and I can pull out the dates, but generally the regional administrator makes an estimate of what catch is expected to be for that full year by, I think it's December something. So there's two more months in the scallop fishing year that still have to occur. There's not a lot of catch that goes on in January and February, but there's some, so it won't be exact. But they will have to make a determination before the start of that fishing year whether AMs are triggered or not for that fishing year. The scallop FMP for both ground scallops and yellowtail is the next subsequent year AMs.
Just to follow up, if I could. So in that scenario, you've determined that by the beginning of February that you anticipate the ACL for scallops, for the limited access scallop fleet, for example, is going to be exceeded. And then the PDT does an analysis, for that overage to determine whether the F rate is actually exceeded or not, and then accountability measures may or may not kick in, and how does that all play into any determination that the regional administrator would make for that fishing year?
Getting some looks, too, so I want to make sure I have the timing right. Emily, do you want to explain the timing?
With the yellowtail sub-ACL, there will be a projection, a determination made in the middle of January, January 15th, on or about, and that would determine whether in the next year an AM was triggered. For the limited access fleets, ACL, whether that was triggered, that would be at the end of the year. I'm trying to find the date reference here, but I think it's September. It would be after the fishing year. It might be sooner, though. I'm just looking in the regs, but
So I think that's where perhaps I was getting confused, because that process that allows the PDT to do the review, I was thinking that that would mean that the AM kicked in at a different time, and it does sound like the yellowtail and directed ones are different. I don't know, I guess maybe we get a little bit more clarification, but I still feel kind of uneasy about what this motion really means. And is it necessary to do it today or not? I don't know. I'm thinking at the moment, I'm just feeling unclear, so I'm not likely to support it.
Dave Gaethel.
You know, Mike, my question is, does it mean what it says? You know, this kind of, does it mean what it says, and does it say what it means? The way I read this is, if this passes, an accountability measure could not be implemented until final estimates of catch are certified, or I don't know what the word would be, but as opposed to projected levels. Is that correct?
So this is a provision that is currently in the multi-species plan. I don't, given the difference in the way scallop for the directed fishery is handled, I don't know that it would ever be used for the directed fishery, honestly, because it's a year later. But for the yellowtail sub-ACL, we're trying to make the decide what the, if it's triggered, we're trying to decide what the reaction to that trigger should be with partial information. And so all this says is, if after you've got more than that partial information, your reaction would have been different, then you have the authority to adjust it. Does that make sense? Does that help any?
So let me see if I can put it into my words and see if there's a projection that an accountability measure is going to be needed. You can do that now. You put in an accountability measure. If this passes and the final estimate of catch is different from the projected estimate of catch, either up or down, then you can adjust the accountability measure accordingly. Is that correct? Okay, now I got it.
Tom.
And following from this, I think we are increasingly clear on the intent. I am still hung up on the word adjust, and I think what we mean when we're talking about it, we mean revised decisions regarding the triggering of an approved AM. And I'm comfortable with that, and I just think with a broad mandate, we could end up with anything. And I just think we need to be specific as to what we're ceding authority to do, and I think I'm entirely comfortable saying, yeah, for all the reasons we described, we should be able to, or the service should be able to go back on better information and say, no, the AM shouldn't be triggered. But I think the way I read this, it's a blank check to make any adjustments, and I think we should be really specific and outline exactly what we mean. And I think replacing the word adjust with revised decisions regarding the triggering of an approved AM gets us a lot closer to what we're talking about, I think.
Are you making that as an amendment? You can also...
I could offer it as a friendly if the maker of the motion is supportive of that.
Before I read it again, offer it up again.
To replace the word adjust with revised decisions regarding the triggering of an approved accountability measure.
That would be okay, because essentially it means the same thing, that she would be given the authority to adjust the accountability measure referencing the tables that have different options that would be used depending upon the overage of the bycatch allowance. So it's an adjust, or it's the way you worded it. I'll go with any way, I'll use any wording that makes council members comfortable. and, of course, the RA. If you're comfortable, I'm comfortable, Pam. So the new wording could be put in. I think the you need to repeat it again, Tom, so it can be typed in, unless it's already there. Okay.
Sorry, just one more adjustment, and this could be my fault. I did not realize the timing of the scallop ACLs, and when Mary Beth brought that up before, I actually don't think you need to include that in this motion. It might complicate it later. The timing of when scallop ACL AMs trigger is already after the fishing year when you have a full year. So that issue I don't think you actually need to give flexibility for. She's already going to wait for the full fishing year. And not, you know, trigger anything until that full fishing year is available. When you do need it is what we've been talking about more about the bycatch. And I apologize if that confused it, but I think you might just need it for the one type of ACL because the other one already waits for the full fishing year.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, with that clarification, Deirdre and I worked on the motion, so after hearing the comments from the regional office and listening to the guidance provided by Deirdre, if there's no objection from the seconder, perhaps it would make sense then to not confuse the issue and delete from the motion the reference to the scallop ACLs so it would read approved accountability measure for bycatch sub-ACLs. It makes it cleaner, easier to understand, doesn't complicate the issue. The last word still is kept. I was only deleting the reference to the scallop ACLs.
And my only last point would be the new text that says decisions regarding the triggering of. That's kind of specific, too, and some of the what the results may find is not whether it's triggered or not, but by how much. And so the way the seasonal closures work, you probably or may have already actually triggered it and started your seasonal closure in March or April, but based on new information, instead of it being closed for four more months, it should only be closed one more month. So that's just a little more specific than maybe it needs to, as long as everyone understands that it's not just about whether it's triggered or not, but that it actually could be the length of a closure based on the final numbers might be, 6 months instead of 2 months or vice versa.
Last sentence, the word based is missing. Right after sub-ACLs, last line, I guess it is in comparison to the other one. Dr. Pierce, are we where we need to be at the moment?
I believe so, Mr. Chairman.
I just was going to add, based on what Deirdre was saying, that perhaps it would be regarding the degree of triggering. So, like you're saying, to provide a little room, whether we had to go backwards or forwards on the degree that the AM was triggered. I don't know if you need it or not.
The conventional wisdom is that may be complicating it. Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you. This has become excessively complex now. I thought what Deirdre said, I'm not sure, I want to make sure I got this now, was it it shouldn't be on regarding the triggering, that should go out? It shouldn't be just triggering? Is that what I understood you to say?
No, I was just mentioning that you don't want to limit it to just that, because what's more likely going to happen is that when she gets a final number from the final year, you're going to have an overage of 1% or 5%, not whether it's actually triggered or not. Just that flexibility to when the final number comes in, should that closure be 3 months or should it be 4 months or should it be 5 months, that's where you want that flexibility, not just related to whether it's triggered or not.
So what you're saying is that the word regarding the triggering shouldn't be in there. Is that what you're saying?
It might be clearer just to not have it, to revise decisions regarding the implementation of would maybe cover whether it's triggered or, you know, how long it should be in place. I was just suggesting that people understand that it's more specific than just triggering it or not.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, maybe let's try adjust. No. decisions we got in the implementation of approved accountability measure, I think that should cover it.
Yeah. So we're back to the original language?
Close, almost, but not quite. Almost. There's been some good refining. It's better than it was. Gets to the destination we, I think, want to go.
Is that all right with the seconder? Mark Alexander. Mary Beth.
Well, I think the language is greatly improved from the beginning, which really confused me. And I still am not that comfortable with sort of doing it on the fly when you don't understand the implications. But it did make me think more in general of a conversation we had earlier today and some of the comments that Tom had on skates. And I think when we're into this management of ACLs, the ability for the regional office, the regional administrator to make adjustments is a growing need. And I think we have to be very deliberate in how we do that. And so far, the only authority we've given the regional administrator is to be more restrictive. I think Tom's, you know, comment today about where we're at with skates right now, and it, you know, we're at 50%, but hopefully emergency action, we're going to be more at 30%. We have no authority for the regional administrator to increase anything that I know of. And we have no, she thinks she does, so that's a good thing. But I mean, we don't have, you know, in other regions they use rollovers, and there's a whole bunch of mechanisms that you can use, but, you know, we don't have the authority or the regional administrator doesn't have that authority to do that in our plan. So I just think it's a broader topic that's not specific to this, and I think we should be thinking about it in those terms, not just for accountability measures, but for some others as well.
Further comments? Go to the audience, Drew, and then Ron.
Thank you. Drew, Minkiewicz Fishery Survival Fund. I think the motion's made a lot of progress through the tinkering that's gone through. Not quite sure, though, it's in a real-world application, it's going to be all that effective, though. Give an example, Southern New England Yellowtail Flounder this year. The initial estimate on Southern New England Yellowtail Flounder is we caught 134% of the sub-ACL. And if AMs had been in place this year, that would have triggered, well, a year-long closure at that time. Then the number was revised, went back and forth, did different things, then it was hovering at 102% there for a little bit. At 102%, that would have been a two-month closure under the current time frame, March and April. We found this out well after March and April. So if we'd gotten this new information, we couldn't go back in time and unclose the area for March and April. The number has since further been revised, and we're now at 87%. So then we wouldn't have triggered any AM. And so if there had been any closure, it would have been unneeded. If you really want to fix this potential problem, the fix is wait until you have all the information, and then you know, checked your numbers, and then you act. And to do that, then you would have to have an AM that's not the following year, but the third year. So for instance, for 2010 fishing year sub-ACL, you have an AM that goes into place in 2012. That's how you fix this problem. That's what was originally in Amendment 15 as the AM, and it got changed at the last meeting of Amendment 15. It's kind of ironic we're here at the last meeting of Framework 23 trying to undo something we did at the last meeting of Amendment 15. But the last meeting of Amendment 15, the council switched its position and had the AAMs implement the following year. That's led to this potential problem that we're now trying to fix. So my suggestion is, if you really do want to fix this problem, make it the AAMs not the following year but the year after. If not, if you don't want to take that step, this is a step in the right direction. But I was telling you, in a real-world application, like in the likely 2% overage, where you have March and April, the first 2 months being the months that are closed, you can't go back and undo them.
Ron Smallowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. Just to follow up on what Drew said, I have a question. If I recall correctly, we built in the ability to recalculate the F based on new information for scallops.
But now we switched this to just be about bycatch.
Okay. But just to deal with the scallop thing, how does that recalculation take place? When, in other words, right now, for example, we have SMAST and VIM surveys. What will it take for that F to be? Is that just a PDT action? In other words, what's acceptable to the regional office for the finalization of the F?
We can pull out the regs, but at some point in the summer, following that previous fishing year, we'll get a final number of catch. And if the AM was if the ACL was exceeded for the limited access fishery, then that's what would start the PDT process to look at F. And by September 30th or so, that final report would have to be available to the council, basically, and to show whether or not it triggered those things or not.
So we have ample time. In other words, if right now we get a report that we've exceeded the allowable catch limit, which is in pounds, does that affect 2012?
We get a report right now?
Right.
Forget
that an SMAS survey was done. We have right now an ACL. And it's a certain amount of pounds. Right. If we exceed that, what happens? When is the decision made that we exceeded it, and what happens?
Okay, so fishing year 2011, this is a little off topic. I don't know if you want me to continue, but okay. Fishing year 2011 starts March 1st, 2011. The fishing year goes on until February 2012. By the August following that fishing year, so August 2012, around then we'll find out what the final numbers are for the year and whether the ACL was exceeded or not. And if it was, then by September 30th, the PDT will do that evaluation of what happened with F. So by September 30th, 2012, or right after there, the vessels would be notified if AMs were triggered for 2012, and they would get days at sea reductions in that same fishing year, 2012. So they would have only from October through the end of the fishing year knowledge of that underage or that reduction if it was triggered.
Okay. I was just trying to make sure that the scallop part of this ACL thing is pretty much taken care of, and it sounds like it is. What I don't understand is, to me, this points out the importance of proactive AMs as opposed to reactive AMs. And I just would like everybody to think about that. Well, this is sort of a good motion as it stands. Let's take an example, the twine tops. We fish 10-inch twine tops now. We used to fish 6-inch. The 10-inch catches lets out half the yellowtail. Imagine if we didn't have the 10-inch twine top now and we were fishing 6-inch. An AM would be, if you exceed your catch yellowtail, require a 10-inch twine top. It seems to me it would be smarter to put the 10-inch twine top in first as a proactive AM and get credit for it. What we're talking about now is we're getting data that tells us that instead of having areas closed on Georgia's Bank from 1st of February to June 15th, from a yellowtail standpoint, it might be more appropriate to close it in maybe August and September. If that's the case, why are we doing that as a reactive measure? It would seem that the logical thing would be is to put that in place to prevent catching the yellowtail. Now, if that occurs and for something and we made a mistake and we don't actually meet our ACL, then we have the next framework action to make the adjustment and introduce a new, more effective, proactive AM. But the thing is, we're being proactive and solving the problem before it happens, as opposed to trying to rectify things after it happens. I just don't understand the benefit of reactive AMs. And that's just the point I want to make. Thank you.
Pat?
I really think we're making so much more of this than we need to. The council is constantly asking whether the agency can make this adjustment or that adjustment. And all this does is build in a little tiny opportunity for making an adjustment when we find, you know, that the new data would call for it. I really think it was a little thing that we made too big.
Further council comment? Call the question. All those in favor so indicate. Fourteen in favor, opposed. Abstention. 1. 14-0-1. Dr. Pierce.
All right, now we are on the last decision for the day regarding yellowtail, I think.
I'm sorry, you're correct. No, there was a friendly. Thank you for bringing it up, though.
So the last decision relates to the yellowtail flounder AMs for the limited access general category fishery. A motion will be made on behalf of the committee. I'll address that when it's time to make that motion. This particular decision is a bit more complicated than I would like it to be. However, as I noted at the beginning of our discussions on scallops, new data were brought forward by the plan development team that has necessitated a different course of action. And I will suggest that after Deirdre is through with her presentation on this issue. Deirdre.
Thank you, David. I'm going to return to the slides, starting with slide 27. And the last few slides of this presentation complete the final decision within Framework 23. So decision 10, as I mentioned before, has to do with developing a yellowtail AM for the general category fishery. Again, just to refresh your memory from Amendment 15, the limited access general category vessels are currently exempt from yellowtail AMs. And the primary rationale there was that during Amendment 15, the bycatch was expected to be relatively low from this segment of the fleet since it's only 5% of the total scallop catch. And the AM areas in particular, the Southern New England Mid-Atlantic one, was expected to have high distributional impacts on some components of the general category fishery, specifically Southern New England, primarily vessels from Rhode Island. So far in 2011, this has been the first year under the sub-ACL. So in looking at the 2010 fishing year information, as we were working on this in the beginning of the year, there was preliminary information available in 2011 to suggest that the bycatch from the general category fishery was higher than expected. And the earlier estimates suggested that about a quarter of all of the yellowtail estimated to come from the scallop fishery was coming from the general category fishery. And we received a letter from the agency over the summer with this information, and the committee requested that the PDT continue developing a measure that would be separate for the general category fishery, but to try to keep in mind to leave some nearshore waters accessible to this fleet, since they're not as mobile as the larger limited access fleet. So the plan development team did develop an alternative. It is Table 5 in Document 1A. I didn't put it on the slides. I apologize. So we developed basically the same Southern New England Yellowtail AM alternative, but we tried to look at each statistical area separately and leave it each one open for some portion of the year in an attempt to kind of make this compromise between having an accountability measure for the segment of the fishery as well as compensating for the fact of its smaller fleet and so forth. And the alternative was primarily designed using VMS data. We looked at 2009 and 2010. As you can see, the plots on the screen, it's pretty clear where the general category fishery is fishing within this Southern New England Yellowtail AM areas, those three statistical areas in the center of the screen. And it's pretty obvious that there's really only a small part of each of those areas where this fishery is fishing. We looked at a lot of the impacts of this alternative, and even though it's more flexible than the one that was considered in Amendment 15, there still are high distributional impacts for particularly vessels from Rhode Island. And on top of that, there are vessels from other states that seem to be landing their product in Rhode Island. So that's sort of a compounded effect that you see when you look at those tables in more detail. So even though only 12% of the general category catch comes from this Yellowtail AM area, it's a big portion for a smaller group of vessels. The VTR data shows that as well. This is a VTR plot of general category effort by state, and the yellow dots are vessels from Massachusetts. The orange, I believe, are from the state of Rhode Island and Connecticut combined, blue from New Jersey, and green from New York. So when we brought this information to the advisors in the committee, the September meetings were the first time that they, saw this information as we were catching up with some of the preliminary estimates of bycatch. There were some very serious concerns that were raised about the 2010 estimate of yellowtail catch that was basically directing this work and having us focus on these AMs. And a lot of concerns were raised at both meetings. Both the industry members and the committee were very surprised that the overall bycatch rate for the general category fishery was such a higher magnitude higher than the limited access dredge bycatch rates. So during the meeting, several came to the microphone and suggested that the trips with the higher bycatch rates must be from limited access trawl vessels and not from dredge vessels, which are, even though they're the majority of the vessels in these fleets, there's just no way these bycatch rates don't make any sense. However, the information was not stratified by gear type at those meetings. So the committee and the advisors were at a tough place, how to move forward. So very reluctantly, both groups did end up supporting the option that's in the document, which would basically establish a yellowtail AM for the general category fishery in the similar statistical areas, but on a different schedule. Immediately following that meeting, NIMS stratified the general category trips by gear type and went back and confirmed that, in fact, 31 of all 106 general category trips that were taken in 2010 were, in fact, on vessels using trawl gear. So about a third of the observed trips were on trawl vessels, and about 25% of catch generally is coming from these vessels year to year, 20 to 25% in terms of the distribution of the fleet. So pretty soon, this has all been over about the last week or so, the council did receive a letter from the agency on Friday, September 23rd, with an updated, yet again revised, which everyone has been mentioning, but this is a positive thing. We're getting this right. The updated 2010 yellowtail bycatch estimate, and this time it is stratified by permit and by gear. So it's difficult at this stage, but I think it's positive that with this, more meetings and transparency and more people, looking hard at this, we are getting to the answer. The total yellowtail estimate did go down from 97.7% was presented at the committee meeting to now 83.7%. And the two reasons that it went down, again, is by stratifying out this separate fleet, this trawl bycatch rate, and just using that bycatch rate on that smaller segment of the fishery instead of expanding it to the entire general category catch, you do get that reduction. And also, this is unfortunately the first time that we've had the full fishing year of observer data available. The PDT hasn't been able to have, or the agency to come up with this number, the full fishing year of observer data, so that was a limitation as well. So we were using calendar year information. The general category dredge fishery, when that fleet was looked at separately, it does have a similar bycatch rate to the limited access dredge fishery as people were expecting. There's a lot of tables that break this down in document 7 for you to see toward the end of the document that show you the separation of each fleet and their component of yellowtail catch if you're interested. But in summary, the trawl fishery, the general category trawl fishery, definitely has a higher bycatch rate than the two dredge components. And for this one particular year, about 17% of the total yellowtail catch is expected to be coming from this segment of the fishery, whereas they are catching about 1% of the southern New England mid-Atlantic scallop catch in that stock area. So there is a disconnect there. Originally, this data, because it wasn't stratified by gear type, we were focusing on the general category fishery in more general terms. And clearly now, with this new information, it's more focused in that really the segment of this entire scallop fishery that is catching more of the yellowtail is the trawl general category fishery. So document 7 does try to include a lot of background about basically what we've discovered in the last week, and staff has had some time to put some tables together about the limited access trawl fishery and who they are and where they are. But again, this all came up after the committee meeting, so there are no specific recommendations or discussion from the committee level about the trawl fleet in particular. So where are we? What do we do? There's just two suggestions on the board about this issue and in ways to move forward. They're also described in a little bit more detail in document number 7. But in a nutshell, basically, we've learned that the limited access general category trawl fishery is where we probably should have been focusing our accountability measure development of alternatives. So we could do that now and develop specific AMs for this component of the fishery, but we obviously can't take final action today. We could try to do that in November at the November Council meeting and essentially do everything that we've done today for the framework, but wait to submit it until we can complete this last part. You should know that that would push back the implementation of this framework at least until, May, June 2012 rather than March. And if there is an overage of the 2011 sub-ACL, then the only accountability measures in place for that overage would be on the limited access fishery as it is under no action, since this would be not effective yet. And all of the other measures within Framework 23, such as the turtle measures and the AM schedule that we just adjusted for the limited access fishery, would not be effective either for 2012. The other option would be to wait on this topic and remove it from Framework 23, essentially identifying no action based on this new information, and we could instead develop specific accountability measures potentially for this trawl fishery in either Framework 24 or if the council ends up in November doing this larger bycatch action, arguably you could do it in that action as well. You should know that the final action for Framework 24 is scheduled for September 2012 and implementation in March 2013. So it would be later than the first option. And the current AMs would be effective, and if there were any overages in 2011, the only AMs again in place for 2012 would be on the limited access fishery. And again, this would be in hopes that nothing gets delayed for that framework. So that's focused on the trawl fishery, and you'll want to, you know, make a decision which way to go with that, and then also what to do about the general category dredge fishery and whether or not, with this new information, that fishery should have a still separate accountability measure or leave it as no action as it was in Amendment 15. As we have on the screen, there was support to adopt something in this framework, but again, that was before a lot of this new information about this dredge versus trawl issue. There are still serious concerns about the distributional impacts of the alternative in Framework 23. Staff was asked to work with the industry after the committee meeting last week to work on basically a different boundary. And I have done that, and I have a figure I can show you that's a more refined boundary of the Yellowtail AM potentially that we could further develop. But honestly, I kind of halted on that work once we started learning this new information about the trawl fishery. At the end of the day, the general category dredge fishery is estimated to have caught 3% of the total yellowtail and about 3% of the total scallop catch in southern New England. Of all the scallop catch in southern New England, so it is, you know, more in line. But you know, that's what those numbers are. So I think in terms of those suggestions for action for the dredge fishery, again, we could do what is in the document in front of you, which would be the alternative described in Framework 23. Today we could keep working on that different boundary for November. We could push it to some future action if that's what you decide to do with the trawl fishery, or again, the other option being no action. So it's kind of across the board. They're big decisions what to do about these fleets based on this new information. But we definitely can still move forward at least with the things that you've already done with decisions 1 through 9, hopefully today at a minimum.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Deirdre has obviously given us a great deal of thought. She has presented a lot of material, and I'm the first to admit that what we have brought forward to the council this afternoon is confusing, not easy to understand. However, we had to do it because this new information was brought forward, and if we ignored it, we would be foolish and we would make a mistake. Very revealing information due to some good work by the technical people by Deirdre and the plan development team. So I have a motion that I'm obliged to make on behalf of the committee. And I spoke to you beforehand, Mr. Chairman, regarding what might be the best approach since the motion that we have made, unless any committee member objects, the motion that we made now is no longer appropriate because it's based on information that was misleading. So I'll make that motion, Mr. Chairman, and then you can give us guidance after it has been made, if that's appropriate. Okay. I would move on behalf of the committee that the council adopt Section 2.2.2.2, implement a separate yellowtail flounder AM for the limited access general category IFQ fishery. That is the motion, and it incorporates that which you see in the decision table, the AMs that are described in the tables found in the decision document. I don't need to repeat those. I don't need to put those into the motion. I'll just make it simply as you see it on the board.
Committee motion, no second required. Jim?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to table this. And that's it.
is there a second? Second, Dave Preble?
You don't have to have it to win.
No. I suggest postpone indefinitely, Jim, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Just postpone indefinitely.
Well, if you table it, that...
Mary Beth, is this about the motion?
It's about where we're headed with this. I was going to make a motion to substitute, in that I think we do want to, you know, to reject it in this framework.
Just hold on a minute.
Okay.
Okay, non-debatable. All those in favor so indicate. Seventeen to zero to zero. Motion carries. Dr. Pierce.
Yes, I would move, and this is not on behalf of the committee, but I would move, in light of the new information that has been brought forward, that we, and I'll reference the slide, or box number 32 that Deirdre has provided in her presentation, I would move that we remove this issue from framework 23 and wait to develop specific yellowtail flounder AMs for the limited access general category trawl and dredge fisheries in framework 24. So that is my motion. It's not specific just to the trawl fishery, but to the dredge fishery as well, and it reflects the next box that asks the question, what about the limited access general category dredge fishery? So it's for both gear types.
Second. Dave Preble. Discussion. Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you. This there really isn't a good way to go with this, and this is not a good way to go, but it's the only way to go. I'd like to just take a moment and go over what this really meant. This took up a lot of time at the committee meeting that turned out to be wasted time, and which almost led us down a really disastrous path. If you look at page 23 on draft framework 23, page 23, table 5, and look above that, the paragraph above it, table 5 below describes the alternative the PDT recommends for the SNEMA YTAM for the LAGC fishery. The focus is on Stat Area 539, since that area has the highest discard cap DK ratio and lowest gallop landings for this fleet. Therefore, that area will be closed the longest, shifting effort to areas with lower YT bycatch rates. That's an important sentence. And I want to stress that there are no bad guys here. There's nobody screwed up. Well, obviously, we all screwed up. But nobody was trying to mess somebody up here. It just worked out that way because we move too fast for something. But if you look at Table 5 now, Area 539 was due to be closed based upon a 25% overage all year. Total closure of 539. We have a handful of boats in Rhode Island, people that I've known for years. They're not big boat scallop fishermen, but they bring in a gross of about $1.5 million a year to Point Judith. They would have been shut down and out of business. That's the fact of it. That's what it meant to the people who would be affected. So, turning to page 2 on the document number 7. Now we find out that once the fleets are separated, and there was a reason why they weren't, by gear type, it is evident that the LAGC trawl fishery is a fleet with higher SNEMAYT bycatch and not the LAGC dredge fishery. It also was evident that that data all came from Statistical Area 613. So in other words, we have a total shutdown of a fishery based upon data that came, first of all, not even from the same statistical area, and secondly, not even from the same gear type. And then we find out that none of the observations were made in 539. The data was all extrapolated. If we look at Table 2, YT discard rate, LA dredge and trawl, 0.00047, LAGC dredge, 0.00057, those two numbers are statistically identical. You cannot differentiate those statistically. Then we look at the LAGC trawl fishery, and it's 0.01323. That is 26 times higher than the dredge fishery, and either dredge fishery. Now, I'm real glad this data came to light. But we spent a lot of time acting on this data, and it turned out to be completely and totally misapplied. I believe in managing with AMs and ACLs. I believe that's the way to go. I think Magnuson is right. But we've got to get it right. And we did not this time. And some people almost got very badly hurt by this. So I don't see any other option, and this is not a good option. But I don't see any other option but to do it this way. Thank you.
Tom?
Thanks. I support the intent of this, but I thought yesterday we had a discussion about a priority that would open up and address this in a comprehensive way, but open up options that might require an amendment to get done. So I wonder if we're setting ourselves up to be in the same position at, you know, final action and kicking it down the road the next time for Framework 24, understanding that rather than setting up closure areas, you know, based on overages, that we might want to deal with this in a sort of more creative or more comprehensive way for whether it's Yellowtail or any of the other flats that we're going to be dealing with in this fishery. So I'd actually like to see us keep, not tie our hands to a specific action or a framework and stick with the priority that we had identified. And if it's, you know, if it's decided by the committee that we need an amendment to get it done, then we can do that.
Dave Gaethel and Paul Howard.
I have a question. I think it's for Deidre. On the slide, I have a hard time here. I think it's 32 on page 16, at the very bottom of the page. I think it applies to where we are right now. The last bullet says, if there is an overage in fishing year 2011, the only yellowtail AM in place would be the AM for the limited access fishery. And then it goes on from there. My question is, if we pass this motion and move to do Framework 24 or an amendment or whatever it is, and we have an overage in the yellowtail AM, if I read this right, does it mean that that will be applied against the limited access fishery? So in other words, if the trawl fishery creates this overage, the limited access people are going to pay for it in 2012? Well, I mean, we're in a pretty big, a bit of a box here. And I don't see how you can make one group of people pay for somebody else's problem just because we can't deal with it. That seems to strike a fundamental issue of fairness. Now, if we can put something in this motion that says, in the event that the overage is triggered by the LAGC fleet or the trawl fleet, that it will be applied after the completion of Framework 24 or something to that effect, then I don't have a problem with this. But if it's going to be that the limited access fleet's going to pay the piper for something they had no hand in creating whatsoever, then I probably can't vote for this.
Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my question, too, that I think the intent of this motion is that we have one ACL. We don't have a sub-ACL for yellowtail that's allocated to the one to the, you know, trawl fishery, one to the dredge fishery, that we still have one ACL for yellowtail, and now if that's exceeded, all three groups are responsible for paying back and have an AM. That's the way I view this motion, as opposed to actually giving a sub-ACL to the two other groups.
Right. I don't think it's been specified, but arguably if you put this issue in a different action, whether it's a framework or an amendment, you could divide it further. You could have done that in this framework, but that's not the strategy the committee went with. But you could in a different action, definitely, to further divide the yellowtail sub-ACL.
Further comments? Dave, one more bite?
No, just a question. I'm sensitive to Dave Gaethel's point. The only reason I didn't bring that up is because there is no overage this year if we combine the fleets, and I'm kind of hoping it goes that way, but we can't count on that. So I'm open to a suggestion here, but I'm not sure exactly what we can do. I had a question, and now it left my mind. I'm getting brain dead.
Sally?
What we could do is just get rid of the end of this motion, and so from and wait to develop. So we would just be getting rid of this element in Framework 23, and then what we would do is when we're talking about priority setting in November, figure out how this fits in with the to-do list for the scallop fishery at that point. Because we can't do anything before then anyway.
Dr. Pierce?
Well, I wouldn't mind doing that. However, the language regarding Framework 24 is put in there in order to make sure that the regional administrator understands that this will be addressed in a very timely fashion. The only way we can move forward, if the regional administrator of PAD is comfortable with our dropping that language, I suppose it would be okay. But unless she feels okay about it, I would rather leave it on the board as Framework 24.
You might... another solution might be to leave it there and put at the end or other appropriate action.
That would be good. Good suggestion, Mr. Chairman. So I would add that language.
Any further discussion? Call the question. Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just quickly, again, we don't want to bog down the specification frameworks like Framework 24, so we would appreciate it, whether it stays in here like currently or not. But when the council discusses in November, it's more than just yellowtail, and it's a lot of tools that we need in the toolbox, changing the boundaries of our access areas, changing the seasons of the access areas, looking at some gear modifications. And whether that requires an amendment or a Framework 25, it would be useful to have staff look over that issue so that we have that information on a table for the November decision. The other thing is I think we need a much more detailed analysis for the council for that November meeting, looking at that net fishery, whether those, in fact, were scallop trips. I mean, there are vessels that held scallop permits, but whether they were on trips that were targeting groundfish or whether they were targeting scallops, I think we need a much clearer definition of what those vessels were doing. And similarly, we have 11 permitted net vessels in the full-time limited access fleet. We don't know whether they're all fishing nets or whether they're fishing dredges and what their bycatch rate is and how that impacts. It would be good to have that information on the table, because I think the council is going to have to readdress the use of nets for catching scallops, not only for these finfish bycatch issues, but for the turtle issues. So it would be useful to have that information available at the November meeting. Thank you.
Ronnie?
Good morning, Edington from Nordic Fisheries. As be part of the process with the EP, I would strongly recommend, I understand the issue and support, but please keep a separate specifications framework. We've got the streamlined specifications framework dedicated just specifications. Got to keep it simple so that framework can move along a little quicker, smoother. We hate to see this would be the second time. I mean, that could possibly become the third time it would be late. So I don't like the wording. You say it's Framework 24. Maybe you could say after the specifications framework. Thank you.
Uh,
Thank you. Michael Marchetti, Eastern England Scallop Fisheries, representing the small group of scallopers that was almost put out of business by this action. I greatly want to thank the people that worked to discover the issue and bring it to light and help us through this. I want to just very simply say that I support the motion at this point. In the next framework, I'm not sure if that's appropriate framework or amendment, but I do believe that something this has to be discovered and discussed further and brought out to light a little more. And we weren't given the proper tools, I think, to hash this out right during the proper process that we just went through with Framework 24. So thank you.
Back to the council. Pat.
Thanks. We have similar concerns about putting it in the specification framework. I'm curious why the first alternative on that slide 32 was rejected. It seems to me it would be much cleaner to try to get it done between now and the November meeting than just approve Framework 23 and move on to Framework 24.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, that obviously it's a tempting course of action. However, I spoke to Deidre about this, and I did not believe that she, the plan development team, the committee would be in a position, would be ready to act on this issue at the November meeting. And if we are not ready to act at the November meeting, then it would mean an unnecessary and unfortunate delay in implementation of Framework 23. I want this framework to be completed and out the door and not put ourselves at risk by having unrealistic demands of staff and the plan development team. I see your point, Pat, but I don't believe it would work.
Further comments? Dave Gaethel?
Yeah, I think this issue is a little larger than it may appear. I'm not sure that one meeting of the scallop committee is going to solve it. I think if you do the 23 days out there, the most you can have is probably one meeting before the November council meeting. You're looking at somewhere around October 23rd at the earliest possible date. So I concur with what David said. I don't think I want to be tied down to trying to get this done for November.
Anything further? Call the question. All those in favor, so indicate. 17-00. Do you have a motion to submit?
Yes, I have a motion that Framework 23 to the Scallop Plan be submitted to the Regional Administrator for review and implementation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Preble. Discussion. Call the question. All those in favor, so indicate. 16-01. Is there anything else, Dr. Pierce?
Yes, but this won't take long. I'm just reporting the motions of the Scallop Committee, and all I need to do is report to the Council other advisory panel motions that were made. They are not relevant to the framework, but I am to bring them forward for you to review and potentially to consider, and that would be shown. That is what I'm talking about is on the last page of the decision document under Turtle Chain Map. And I'll just refer you to document 2. I think it's document 2, Deirdre. The advisory panel motions. Okay, the advisory panel decisions specifically. And you can find them by looking at the blocks that say not Framework 23. Motion or decision 4. Recommendation 4, that is. Recommendation 10, And recommendation 11, these relate to the turtle chain mat regulations. I'll just read them. Well, I'll however you wish to proceed, Mr. Chairman.
And the purpose of bringing these forward, I mean, can individual council members read them on their own in that document? And we get the same benefit?
Well, it reads, if the council agrees with these particular recommendations made by the advisory panel, then those issues could be forwarded to the National Marine Fisheries Service related to the turtle chain mat regulations. So it would be up to a specific council member to actually suggest specific action on this. If no council member cares to do so, then business is concluded.
Yeah. I guess normal process to move that thing along would be to have a recommendation that actually comes from the committee rather than directly from the APs.
That is true. There is nothing being offered by the committee, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anything else? Dave?
I was just going to say, as a point of order, if it's not on the agenda, I don't see how we can take action on it.
We aren't. Okay. Unless there's anything else, we are adjourned for the day. Thank you all for all your work today. And thank you, Dr. Pierce, for outstanding scholarship committee work and staff work. We start at 8 o'clock with a subject near and dear to my heart, groundfish.